Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Mary. I'm an honor student, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. This is the seventh event in our 16th annual Siciliano Forum. This year's topic is the future of higher education. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite all students to go next door to our office or to our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Rethinking Credentials as Value Predictors, Showcasing Relevancy in the Digital Age. Today's guest is Mike Linden. Mike Linden is a co-founder and has been the chief technology officer of TopCoder since April of 2001. In that time, he's overseen the development of a practical, working, and commercially available software competition system and development community. Mike and his team built the TopCoder website and distributed development methodology, the user interface, and the incentives that motivate performance as well as participation by TopCoders over 450,000 registered members. Mike is a principal investigator on the DARPA CS STEM program, a two-year effort to use games and crowdsourcing to develop skills and interests in computer science among U.S. high school students. In addition, Mike is also a co-principal investigator in the DARPA Inspire program and a principal investigator in DARPA's crowdsourced formal verification program. Mike is a co-inventor on six issued patents and six pending patents in the field of software development, competitions, and community. Please join me in welcoming our guest.
Well, thank you, everybody, and thanks for taking the time out of your day to come and listen to what I have to say. So basically what I'm going to do today is tell some stories about my experiences over the past 10 years and how they're relevant to kind of community and the social aspects of the internet and digital badging and digital achievements and how that's pertinent, potentially pertinent to kind of the concept of higher education as well. So let's start off by looking at some of the headlines that I looked over the internet to try to find some pertinent headlines here that kind of focus on what's happening and how we're teaching and how we're learning, how is that changing, and why it's accelerating. Over the past 5 years, this concept of digital badges really has, taken hold on the scene of education and on the scene of learning, and we're going to kind of investigate kind of why that is and how we can take advantage of that going forward. And so, as you can see here, we have the New York Times talking about, whether too many Americans are getting degrees. We have Harvard Business Review just a couple of weeks ago imploring companies and employees to stop requiring degrees in their hiring efforts. We have Forbes talking about how badges can really play an important role in the free education revolution. Again, the New York Times talking about the importance of badges, and U.S. News talking about how badges could be significant in their impact on higher education in general. And so, obviously, there's a lot of people talking about how can digital badging be effective and how can it kind of change the game when it comes to education, not just grade school, middle school, high school, and higher education, but lifelong education. Incentivizing individuals to continuously try to learn and try to increase their skills as their life goes on. So we'll talk about the history of digital badging, a brief history of digital badging. I'm sure that some of you are familiar with Xbox and Xbox Live. Back in 2005, Microsoft rolled out their Gamer Score program. It was basically an achievement program, and it's recognized as being the first real important community-based achievement program that really captured the concept of achievements in digital badging. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with Xbox and gaming, but this was an incredibly successful program in what it was intended to do, and that was to get people to play Xbox games and get people to continuously play Xbox games and get people to continuously participate in the community, the Xbox community, from a revenue standpoint. That's essentially what the goal of this program was, is to get money out of the users. But it really caused a lot of people to, you know, say, this is something that might be pertinent to, you know, above and beyond giving Microsoft money. We might be able to utilize this kind of achievement philosophy in changing the way that people are motivated and changing the way that education is done. And so in 2011, P2PU, which is Peer-to-Peer University, along with Mozilla Foundation, in collaboration with the MacArthur Foundation, basically wrote a white paper on how could we create a kind of a general open badging system that can collect and tap into all of the various, since 2005, a lot of companies, a lot of agencies, organizations, institutions have been implementing badging type of programs. In other words, if somebody comes to your website and performs some sort of a task, then, you know, give them some sort of credentials, you know, at least within that sub-community that indicate that they've performed that task or reached a certain level of efficiency in some sort of a task. And so what these organizations were saying, let's collect that. Let's try to harness that into a centralized location so that we can take it upon ourselves, and that's them, I'm speaking for them, to create the infrastructure that makes it easy for everybody to add badges into a backpack. In other words, this portable backpack, so we can track everybody's learning, everybody's progress, everybody's achievements as they progress through their life. So this was an important step because this white paper really took the concept of badging from everybody's in the back of their mind thinking about how can this be done to execution. So later on in 2011, Mozilla built or began the progress of actually building this infrastructure. So from the output of that white paper, they said, we're going to build this, we're going to host this, at least preliminarily, and we're going to try to get all of these entities from around the world to use this backpack. And so they began actually building a badging system. And some of the key elements of those badging system are, number one, a wide range of achievements. So going from these sub-communities that had very specific types of achievements, Xbox being a good example, these achievements probably aren't particularly relevant in a wide range of real-world skills. And I say probably because that may not be the case either, but to collecting lots of granular digital badges from just, you name it, any sets of skills, any sets of activities, not just online, but, you know, the concept of badging, non-digital badging, goes way back. You have Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and 4-H, and, you know, badges goes way back. So the digital badges really is just a way to facilitate that process. And so evidence and proof, this building an infrastructure that can support being able to prove that if I, Mike Lydon, say that I've achieved this badge from this community, that yes, it's me, and yes, I did actually achieve this badge. Whether or not that's meaningful, we'll get to that a little bit later in the presentation, but the fact that there's some sort of evidence and proof that I actually achieved the badge, that's built into the infrastructure, because that's important. That a lot of skepticism comes from that. Of course, granular recognition, going from, we'll take the concept of higher education, going from passing a course as a recognition or getting a degree in a specific program as recognition, taking that and dialing it way back into a more granular level, into very specific tasks. And so maybe getting badges for simply accomplishing, a micro task. If I'm a member of a community, the fact that I've posted 10 helpful answers in some sort of a social community, that could be a badge. That's an achievement, and that's meaningful in some way. And so what Mozilla is thinking, if we can collect all of these meaningful pieces of information, then in aggregate, they can mean something a lot bigger and a lot more robust than simply, I have a degree or I passed a course. And hard and soft skills, that's important in that most people, when we're thinking about digital badging, especially for employment, we're thinking about the hard skills. We're thinking about, do I know a specific programming language or, do I know about biology, or if I'm studying to be a physician, do I know enough, hard skills, hard information to be able to, to be successful in that field, but soft skills as well. This is what employers have always had trouble with assessing individuals, assessing candidates coming out of colleges. Do they have the collaboration skills? Do they have the leadership skills and the ability to work as a team, the ability to take initiative, those sort of soft skills? Those can come out of badging as well. And so this infrastructure is designed to not just focus on hard skills, but focus on potentially all sorts of achievements and digital badges. And then community is a big part of badging. From a motivational standpoint, community really drives, in my opinion, it really is one of the key elements to driving badging, because it's community reputation that's a very strongly motivating factor. And so this infrastructure takes into consideration the fact that community is key. I should be reading it over here. Okay, open and decentralized infrastructure. And so Mozilla's, for those of you that don't know about Mozilla Foundation and the Mozilla browser and all of that, everything's open, everything's open source. The whole concept of the Mozilla Foundation was founded upon things being open and readily available for others. And that's no different with this infrastructure. It's an open infrastructure. It encourages anybody who has any desire to tap into an open badging, an open backpack infrastructure, to be able to do that with open APIs, even contribute to the source code effort, just like with their Mozilla browser. And decentralized, meaning there's not going to be anybody that owns the data. There's not going to be any central authority that has control over the data. They've designed this infrastructure very carefully so that, if one entity or one database happens to be removed from the infrastructure or removed from the internet, then it won't affect the overall nature of how the badging infrastructure is working. And then controllable and flexible by the producer in this case being the individual that's collecting the badges. And so Mozilla wants to make this infrastructure such that if I am the person collecting the badges and I want, the world to see these three achievements, and I want only my close group of friends to see all of my achievements, and I want this specific employer to only see these achievements, then I can do that. I can control who's able to see what achievements. And so it's not a situation where everything I've ever done or ever achieved is automatically available for everybody to view. And then again, validation and authentication. They've spent a lot of time thinking about, how can we make it that if I'm an employer and you as a candidate say that you've, achieved some sort of a badge, some sort of a skill, how can I make it easy for me to be able to click through on this infrastructure and verify that you indeed did receive this and you're not making it up and you didn't just paste this image onto your web page, and that the skill itself is pertinent to what I'm looking for. And so the way that this works is I can click on a badge and get more information about the badge. I can get information about what it took to get the badge. I can click on the individual and get linked over to the producer's website. So in this case, maybe it was you passed an online certification course for a programming language. I'm going to talk a lot about programming because that's my background, but this can really apply to any sort of field. And I can get back to that website, maybe even with pictures, right? So I can see a picture of this person in that specific community and verify that this is, in fact, the individual. So a lot of thought has to go into how to authenticate the badging. And so the ecosystem of badging essentially looks like this. You have the general infrastructure. These are the APIs. This is how somebody can put badges into the system. Somebody can view badges and get badges out of the system. So it's the software. Then we have the badging providers. The providers are the entities that are creating the badges and deciding through an assessment process who gets these badges. Whoops. We have the producers. The producers of the badges are the people like you and me, the people that are going through whatever the exercises are that it takes to receive one of these achievements, one of these digital badges. And then the displayer, these are the individuals, whoever they are, the entities around the world that are interested, for whatever reason, in displaying badges on their website, whether it's in aggregate from a lot of different areas or whether it's individual badges. and the consumers of the badges. The consumers of the badges are the ones that are finding value in those badges. So the obvious example is an employer looking for skills for somebody coming out of school. They would be the consumer of these digital badges. But in many cases, the consumer is going to be the same as the producer, such as in the Xbox situation. That's a community. It's a reputation-based community. And I'm producing badges. I'm, you know, going through all these tasks in various games to try to get as many digital achievements as I can. But I'm also the one that's interested in seeing who else has those same achievements. And then there's this concept of an aggregator. And this is the part, the entity that I'm the most excited about. And I'm not going to get into it too much now because I have a slide dedicated to it. But this is the power of actually data mining achievements that people, the granular achievements that people are accomplishing throughout their online careers, their online life. And I think that's one of the most powerful aspects of badging going forward. So who's doing digital badging? There's an awful lot of people that are doing digital badging. These are kind of the heavy hitters. These are the ones that were doing it from the beginning. Top coders in there, and of course NASA has always been strong into badging. Smithsonian even provides badging on their website. You can go through exercises and receive badges that you've actually earned a certain level of proficiency within their history program. And then Carnegie Mellon up here has been doing a lot of research into the kind of the behavioral psychology behind badging and why it works and how it can be more effective and how to entice people to want to do it. And Badgeville is an organization that focuses on gamification specifically, how to use and leverage gamification to get users on the internet to perform tasks that a company or an organization might want them to perform, and leveraging achievements, digital achievements, much like Microsoft did, as a way to kind of motivate that. So back in 2011, towards the end of 2011, this organization called Haystack got together with Mozilla and the MacArthur Foundation and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation from a funding perspective, and ran they had been running competitions for years, but they launched a competition called Badges for Lifelong Learning. And the organization is Digital Media and Learning. And basically what they've been tasked with is using competition to research education. And so in 2011, the focus of this competition that they ran was digital badges for lifelong learning. And really what came out of this was significant and, in my opinion, pretty amazing. The nature of this competition was that various teams from around the world had to propose on solutions to solving education problems using community and using digital badging. And the competition itself ran, I'm not sure how long it ran, a couple of months. And I had been asked by Haystack to be involved in this competition, be involved in structuring this competition. And the reason was because TopCoder, which I'm going to get into a little history of TopCoder too as one of my other stories, but basically what TopCoder does is we run competitions on the internet for software. And so they were interested in getting our experience in structuring competitions and how can we help them structure this competition. And so I went in and spoke with them a couple of times in a collaboration format discussing how we're going to do this. And what I realized at that point, and for some reason it hadn't clicked beforehand, is that TopCoder has been doing digital badging since 2003. I just never called it digital badging. I never thought of it as digital badging. And I had never really thought about the relevancy of what we were doing outside of the ecosystem of TopCoder and how it was helping TopCoder. And so it was really kind of, and I'll get into the history of the badging at TopCoder too, but really kind of interesting that I realized that I had more to contribute to this conversation than just helping them structure a competition. It so happened that TopCoder, my organization, had been working in digital badging probably longer than a lot of other organizations that were even on that previous slide that I showed you. So I also was asked to be a judge of this competition, and so a finalist judge. And so everybody flew out to California, some various finalist teams, lots of teams. There was probably about, five or six dozen people that were competing for funding from the MacArthur and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to actually build these pilots for badging. And the breadth of ideas, it blew me away. You know, I had to judge probably 12 different ideas, and there were six other teams of judges that were judging completely separate ideas because there were just so many finalist entries that they wanted to consider funding for. And it just made me think that, wow, there's a lot of people in the world that are thinking about how can we change education, how can we use digital badging, how can we change the way that people are learning, how can we better motivate people to learn. And it was just amazing to me how many people are thinking about that. This is just an example of some of the ideas that were actually funded from that competition. There was an awful lot of them. This is just a small subset. There was probably a couple of dozen teams that got funded to go build pilot programs. Mouse was basically what one team proposed as a way to basically support computational digital literacy among youths. Social media was a really interesting idea that a team had come up with, a way to kind of get teachers and students talking not necessarily about the specific coursework, but about how can social media and digital badging be leveraged to make the assessment process and make the education process and the learning process different. So kind of like a social community to discuss those. And digital on-ramps was specific to Philadelphia. It was a proposal for a website of tools and exercises to help kind of the underserved inner city individuals enter the workforce by gaining skills, specifically in, you know, digital literacy. All of these using achievements and badging, you know, heavily in their strategy. So, what makes badging difficult? You know, I've touched upon a couple of these already, but method of assessment is something that needs to be discussed because, you know, in most cases, if we want these badges, especially the ones that deal with learning and the ones that deal with helping students, helping the learners enter the workforce and prove to other people that they have specific skills, we want them to be reputable, right? And so the method of assessment has to be open. In other words, for a given badge, it's important that anybody who has a vested interest in that badge knows how the assessment was done, so that they can understand that it was done fairly and it was done up to their standards and it wasn't just some arbitrary person just deciding that this person should get this badge. And that can, there's a lot of ways that assessment can be done. There's objective assessment, you know, there's completely subjective assessment. So that's, you know, somebody comes up with a digital design for a website and I say that's great and I give you a badge for it. That's completely subjective. And then there's the in-between, right? There's assessment that can be done through through extensive scorecards. So for subjective type activities, for instance, going back to my computer background, if somebody decides to architect a system and we have to decide whether or not that person did a good job in architecting that system, then we can show and make open all of the scorecards that we went through to actually grade that person's architecture and how we were doing it as objectively as possible against everybody else. And so, you know, the method of assessment, again, it's just important because it has to be reputable. And the validity of the results really goes back to the assessment as well. But validating the results is difficult, but Mozilla is addressing that in their OBI, the Open Badge Infrastructure, using some of the techniques that I discussed before about how, you know, the linking back and the providing as much information as possible. And then the authenticity and the identity, these are difficult. We're talking about online, you know, for the most part, online activities, right? And so, you know, we're never going to get to a point where we know for sure that somebody who says that they did something online, that it was actually that person, unless we require, for all of these activities that are happening online, a webcam, right? So there's some sort of recorded proof that this person was sitting in front of this computer and they did what they said they did. You know, and there are some some, you know, e-learning type of websites out there, credentials, you know, online credential systems that actually do that. They require a webcam and they require a screenshot and you have to present those. But for the most part, I think really what we're trying to get to is, given the fact that identity might not be 100% solvable, can we get to a better place than we're at now? In other words, can we improve the education and the learning system, even though it might be a little bit more difficult to do identity proof? And the reason why I'm focusing on this is because from a lot that I've read, this is the skeptics of the digital badging system seem to focus primarily on that area, on the proof of identity of individual learners. So here comes the psychology. So I don't know anything about psychology, but this is just my opinion on why badges are motivating individuals. And there's a lot of different reasons for this, and there's a lot of different reasons to be using badging. And so across those different reasons for using badges, there's going to be different reasons. There are different motivating factors. But from what I can come up with, there's this checklist mentality. This is really key. And so, you know, going back to the Xbox example, it's the human nature to, if you know that there's something out there that you can do additional to what you've done, and you haven't done it yet, and others in your peer group have, then you're going to have a tendency to want to go do that, to want to showcase that you've also done that. And you're going to keep wanting to do that until you exhaust all of the options. And so there's that mentality, and that's what made the Xbox achievement system so important. And that's the gamification of education and of real-world work output. You know, that's like the holy grail. If you can get some sort of a website in place where the individuals participating have this checklist mentality, they have this kind of jumping to the last point, this addiction to receiving these digital badges, then you've really accomplished something pretty important, because you're strongly motivating these people, and that's hard to do. And of course, reputation, online identity, you know, there's the whole concept of online identity. It's new, completely new. It didn't exist, you know, even 5 years ago, barely. But now everybody seems to have an online identity that's very closely guarded, very closely crafted, and reputation is really key. And digital badges are a way to kind of enhance reputation among various social groups and peer groups and help groups that exist on the internet. And for entertainment, you know, in some cases, just the fact of receiving badges, especially if the activity that you're receiving badges for happens to be particularly entertaining, you know, entertainment itself can be a motivating factor. In fact, it's a strong motivating factor, but it's probably one of the hardest things to achieve when we're talking about something other than a strictly entertainment, like a game activity. And there's certain tasks that are monotonous. There's a lot of websites, and crowdsourcing in general, the concept of crowdsourcing, of being able to, a company or an organization, be able to get some list of tasks done by individuals from around the world, by breaking those tasks down, that's becoming very prevalent and very important in how work is done and how work output is produced. And so crowdsourcing itself, the entities that are performing this crowdsourcing have found that, you know, obviously not all work is fun. Some work is monotonous. Let's take Mechanical Turk, for example. Mechanical Turk is they're a micro-tasking crowdsourcing company. What they do is they focus on crowdsourcing micro-tasks. So, for instance, say I have a set of, 375 pictures, right? Some old pictures, or I've scanned them in or whatever, and I need somebody to find out in all those pictures where's my cousin Eddie, right? How many of these pictures have cousin Eddie in them? Well, I can either look through all these pictures, and the 300 probably isn't a good example. Let's say it was 30,000 pictures, right? And so I don't have the time to do it myself. So I can upload these pictures to Mechanical Turk and pay whoever around the world 5 cents a piece to tell me where cousin Eddie is. That sort of crowdsourcing can be particularly tedious and monotonous. And somehow coming up with the way of applying badging to alleviate monotony and incent people to continuously move forward in the tasks that they're doing, not so entertaining tasks, that's motivating. And addiction as well. I keep getting back to the addiction piece. Addiction is generally viewed as bad, right? A bad thing. You know, there's video game addiction, drug addiction, and in all cases they're viewed kind of poorly. But if you can really addict somebody to something good, to learning amassing badges in the learning field or in the education field, then that's a good thing, right? So it's not necessarily all bad. And then there's some not so obvious benefits, in that, you know, badging can take place across a breadth of different, fields of study and disciplines. And if you can use, if badging can be leveraged, especially aggregate badging across multiple websites and entities, to get people to want to do something outside of a domain that they're particularly skilled in or interested in, you know, higher education is a great example. Sometimes a student will focus on their own degree program intensely, not knowing whether or not that's what they really want to do, but just knowing that right now that seems to be what I want to do. So badging can incent people to go outside of that. We can nudge them outside of their comfort zone, what they want to do and what they feel that they're good at, and potentially inspire them in other fields outside of what they're focused on. Okay, the top coder story. I've been promising it's coming. So back in 2001, Top Coder was created I should point out that what Top Coder does now is completely different than what we were doing in 2001, but the story and the progression is very relevant to this discussion. So we started Top Coder in 2001 because in 2000, myself, as well as a number of the founders of a traditional software consulting company, had sold the company, and we're looking for a way to build a new company that kind of solved some of the problems that we had found at that old company. And with the biggest problem that we had at the traditional software consulting company was hiring. We could not get that down to a science. So we can interview people, we can test people, we can have people come into the office and try to creatively solve logical thinking problems and write on the whiteboard equations to solving problems and how they would implement some sort of a solution to a problem using a programming language. But there just wasn't enough time and enough depth to accurately, through this assessment process, through this interview process, to accurately predict whether or not that individual was going to be successful in the job that we were hiring for, a programmer at a consulting company or a project manager at a consulting company. It just did not meet our level of satisfaction, and that was a common problem. You know, it's very expensive to hire somebody and then have to let them go. It's expensive from a benefit standpoint, and it's expensive from a customer relationship management standpoint. Perhaps this person had been put on a customer, and then we find out that they're not really that skilled in what they're doing. And so we were thinking there's got to be a better way. How can we really figure out empirically, or as empirically as possible, if individuals that we're hiring actually had the necessary skills, even the fundamental or the innate skills, right? So with programming, it's computational thinking and logical thinking. Does this person have the mindset to be a programmer? So we created an online competition for individuals from around the world to show up in this. We created this Top Coder Arena. That's what we're looking at here. It's a Java application that's online. People can log into it from anywhere in the world. And at specific times, back then we were doing twice a week, we would run competitions. They would last 2 hours. People would log in. They would, as quickly as possible, implement programming solutions to these easy to complex logical thinking puzzles. And we gamified it. We made it kind of interesting and gamey so that not only were they just trying to implement solutions, but they were trying to find holes in other people's solutions, and they would get rewarded with points. If I came up with a test case that broke somebody else's code, really fun stuff. And it became pretty popular because it was entertaining. But we had a couple of problems due to the popularity of it. Number one, we couldn't, the level of intellect of the people that were participating in this got so high that we couldn't really come up with problems. You know, my staff was unable to come up with the right logical thinking problems to help, you know, keep them engaged in the competition. And so we started using that's when we realized we have to use this crowd. We have to leverage them to do tasks for us. So we started having them write the problems for us. And the other problem that we had was scalability of the infrastructure. There's a lot of people participating in the competitions. We had a pretty good architecture, a pretty good infrastructure in place, but it just wasn't cutting the mustard. And so that's when the shift in where TopGrader was then to where we are now really changed. We decided we need to leverage crowdsourcing to basically motivate people that are smarter than us to solve problems, such as a scalability, software architecture problem. And so we had the members completely rewrite this infrastructure that we had. And at that point, we decided, okay, back in 2001, we were running these competitions. We were rating people. We were assessing people based upon their proficiency in these algorithmic competitions that they were participating in. And by the way, back then, the point was to sell this information. It was so that we could help companies that are hiring give them more data points. What we didn't realize is back then we were essentially doing digital badging. You know, we were rating members in various algorithmic tasks as to what we were thinking their proficiency was. And it turns out that we were providing digital achievements for these competitors, and we were providing those to companies that were looking to hire. And I'll get a little bit more into the implications of that. So today, you know, this slide isn't really all that relevant, but it's relevant because it's crowdsourcing. And I think crowdsourcing is very, very important to digital badging because it can help to really facilitate the rapid growth of data points that are necessary to really assess the predictability of not just a single badge, but maybe an aggregation of badges. And predictability in predicting how much aptitude or how well that individual that possesses those digital badges may actually do in some sort of a designated task, whether it's a job that an employer is hiring them for. And so the nature of crowdsourcing is that we have a large community of solvers. We have workflow applications that can take output of one competition and bump it into the input of another competition. And basically we're building software by breaking all these tasks down into little components, running competitions for them, reassembling them, providing the proper incentives so that we can motivate the individuals that are participating to decide for themselves. Just like with a digital badge, it's a risk-reward proposition. If somebody's deciding, if I'm going to spend my time attempting to get this digital badge, no matter how much time it is, it might be 20 hours, it might be 20 minutes, is it worth whatever the reward of receiving that badge is? And to every badge earner, it's different, right? They have to decide, what's the reward? Is it a potential financial reward? Is it potential reputation reward? So that's where TopGrader is. We play in that same space, is trying to figure out how to really make that risk-reward proposition beneficial to the constituents, to the people that are participating in these tasks. And so to give you kind of an example or a good correlation to what it is that TopGrader really is doing right now, I present you with this photograph. This is it's the Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico. It's the largest radio telescope in the world. And the point of this radio telescope is essentially listen to outer space, right, to try to find radio signals and capture them and record those radio signals from outer space. And one of the biggest users of the data that's produced by that radio telescope is this institute called the SETI Institute. SETI stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So what they're interested in is trying to, you know, cull through all of these signals that this radio telescope is capturing and try to find out if it can find signals that are non-natural, right? Potentially they're being generated by some other civilization. So it's a lot of data, and the SETI Institute, with access to mainframe computers and all sorts of fancy algorithms to, a lot of students, that this came out of Berkeley, to help work on this project, was not able, and this is back in the 80s, was not able to come up with a way to effectively process this data so that they were processing enough data that they felt they had the breadth to say either yes or no, that they're finding signals or not finding signals. And so in the late 90s, this program called SETI at Home came out. And the SETI at Home program, I don't know if any of you remember this, but it was basically a screensaver that it went viral. Back then, viral wasn't even a term, but essentially it did. Everybody had this thing running. It was a screensaver that allowed the person running the screensaver to lend their CPU cycles on their computer to help this program. So it was basically the first massively distributed, massively parallel processing project where they blew away the processing power of what they could use for their mainframe computers and their big computers and all that, because they had everybody's computer, by everybody, obviously that's an exaggeration, but quite a few people's PCs dedicated whenever they were idle, which is a lot, to helping them process their signals. So the point of all of this is that that is essentially what Topcoder is doing now, except there's a few big differences. We're not renting people's CPUs. We're renting people's cognitive cycles. So, you know, their cognitive surplus. So, you know, whereas a computer might be sitting idle on somebody's desk and tapping into that CPU to help solve problems, in this case, you know, somebody might have a decision to make. Do I want to watch TV or play a video game, or do I want to spend an hour working on this competition and maybe win some money for it and maybe learn something? And there's a lot of different motivating factors why people would want to participate in this. And we're trying to tap into that. We're trying to tap into people's cognitive surplus. And that's important because more and more organizations are doing that. This crowdsourcing thing is really getting pretty big. And digital badging fits perfectly within crowdsourcing. It fits perfectly because we can really round out somebody's profile. If I'm getting a badge for participating well, or maybe achieving certain levels of proficiency in all of these exercises. So with Topcoder, we're talking about a lot of different types of competitions. It's software architecture, it's finding bugs, it's fixing bugs, it's implementing code, designing websites, quality assurance. There's all sorts of different tracks. And we have a lot of members who have these badges, who have these ratings, and those are valuable to employers. They're very valuable to employers, and they're valuable to predictiveness, and I'll get into the predictiveness a little bit. This is an example of some of the badging that Topcoder does. This was our foray into badging, probably back in 2003 or 2004. And the reason we did this, by the way, it wasn't because we said to ourselves, my gosh, digital badging is becoming big, and we have to get into the world of digital badging because we need to help all of our community members get jobs. The reason we did it is because they were asking us to. You know, we hit a point where the members, and it's very interactive on our website. There's, you know, forums and message boards and all that. And the community members were asking us very regularly, essentially saying, you know, you're having us participate in these tasks. We're helping you. We're helping your customers. In many cases, we're getting paid. We're getting a nice education out of this. But wouldn't it be nice if we had a way to tell employers or tell other people, or from a reputation standpoint, just put on our website that we've accomplished these tasks, that we've become proficient in, or at least we're good at, you know, algorithms in Topcoder or system architecture in Topcoder. And, you know, we thought about it and said that's a pretty good idea. If it's another motivating factor to get people to want to do things on Topcoder, then we should implement this. And so we implemented these. This is a kind of a live badge. This data is populated in real time whenever this badge is loaded. It's something that people can put on their website or on, you know, something digital, you know, that has access to the internet, so maybe a LinkedIn profile, a Facebook, or whatever. And these are static badges that we just provided members with to put on, you know, maybe on a printed resume or something like that. So since then, we've started taking badging a little bit more seriously. And this is because of the digital badging revolution. It's because of what I've learned through working with Mozilla, through working with MacArthur and Haystack, and finding out that people are passionate about badges and people are passionate about trying to change the way that learning is done and change the way that education are done. So we implemented a more robust badging system. This is a member profile page. Essentially, these are the tracks of competition that people can participate in. Within each track, there's lots of statistics. There's lots of potential badges that people can earn for those tracks. There's neat little graphs that show people's progress over time. There's these numerical rating values, which are very precise badges. They, you know, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the chess rating system. Every time you play in a rated chess game, every time you play a game of rated chess, your rating gets adjusted depending upon how well you did in that game compared to how strong your opponent was. Well, we took that system and derived it for kind of multi-competitors. So in a situation where it's not just head-to-head game, but it might be, you know, 100 people competing in that type of competition. And so this is an ongoing skill rating. And the interesting thing is, as much as we would like to try to predict how that skill would play out into some other field, into the workforce, into some company that's looking to hire somebody, it's something that we've always been a little hesitant to do. And we've always just said what this is good at predicting is how well somebody's going to do in this very specific type of competition. And what we've started doing recently, again, going into the prediction, is using this information to attempt to predict how well somebody would do in something else. And that's done through data mining and statistics. And that's kind of the aggregator role that I'll get into again. And so, you know, paying attention, there's a lot of factors that we need to keep in mind with badges. And, you know, if they're going to be recognizable across communities or even within a community as a symbol of stature and a symbol of reputation, then, you know, some care has to be taken into how they're designed. With this particular case, the type of the badge is going to have a very certain shape. So we spent a lot of time in researching shapes, and we used the members to actually help us with this. And then the way the badges are colored and the way that they're utilized are different. So this is these badge meters that we have that show, you know, it's basically a badge progression. This is the number of forum posts that somebody's made. So if they've made one forum post, they actually get a badge. The first time somebody posts in the forums, they get a badge for that. And then their badge fills up as they post more and more. Same thing for submitting in competitions and prizes and how they're placing. And then over here, there's, you know, soft skills type badges, it's spirit badges, it's how well people are mentoring, it's contribution, and then a completely different type of badge for this concept of co-pilots. These are people that basically project, people are competing to do project management, and there's just a whole lot of additional skills that are necessary, so we had to build a more complicated badging system. And so based on all of these badging, all this badging we're doing, you know, this assessment, these ratings, these algorithmic competitions that we're running, we've caught the eye of a lot of companies. A lot of companies that have essentially thought to themselves, the digital badging that at the very least Topcoder is doing is important to us, important enough for us to want to be able to get access to the individuals, you know, contact information from the member base along with statistical information, badge information, rating information, so that they can shortcut the hiring process to some extent. And so these are companies that just have worked with Topcoder in doing recruiting based upon the badging that we have. And in two specific instances, we know anecdotally with Google, I believe the situation recently is that if somebody has a certain level of badge, a certain proficiency, it's called a red Topcoder member. When somebody reaches red, their handle color changes and they show up as, their username shows up as red wherever it appears on the website. So if somebody's a red Topcoder member, then they completely circumvent 5 out of the 9 interview steps that Google has. And NSA is another example. The National Security Agency has they've established a fast track program for any resume that comes in and somebody has a certain level of rating on their resume. They flag that, they put a stamp on that resume. And generally, those resumes will get a lot of additional requisitions from various agencies for interviewing those people. And so it's working, right? This whole being able to translate the skills that somebody is accumulating through crowdsourcing exercises or any sort of website that's providing digital badges, it's getting the attention from at least an employment standpoint. They are indicating that, yes, this information is predictive, right, and valuable for these companies to utilize. Valuable enough for them to pay Topcoder to utilize this information. Let me just do a time check here. Uh-oh. Oh, I turned it off. Does anyone know what time it is? What is it? Okay. All right. So I will go pretty fast through here. I do want to leave time for questions. So This is another website through a DARPA grant that Topcoder built for educating high school and middle school students. Badging plays a key role in this website as well. It's kind of inspirational and not overtly educational, but more entertainment. But the games were developed to be educational, even though the participants might not know it. So this is, I guess, what I would want to focus on right now, and that's the aggregator role, getting back to that. I keep mentioning this role of predictability and aggregation, and I really think that's the exciting place that badging is going. It's being able to, if we take the granularity of the badges, right, we keep breaking them down into more granular levels, and what, to me, to, you know, from a statistical and a scientific mind, I'm thinking these are data points, right? These are data points that can be used, they can be leveraged, and they can be mined, right, from a statistical standpoint. So I might be able to draw correlations. If I can aggregate badges that you've received from this website and that website, even games that you've played and digital accomplishments and learning websites, then I could probably, and I get enough data points from enough people, then I could generate these profiles, these predictability profiles that can actually predict how well somebody with a set of badges is going to perform in a specific role. Now, it would be more difficult to predict whether they won't be able to do that, but to predict whether or not somebody will be able to perform to a certain level of proficiency or skill is something that's it's possible to do, especially when we start collecting the granular badges. Not necessarily, you know, it's much more difficult if somebody says, I have a degree from this university, to be able to come up with some predictability, because there's not many data points there, right? There's only a finite number of people that have that degree, and it's very difficult to garner or to collect whether or not somebody is successful in a specific role at a company. And that's why I keep going back to the crowdsourcing thing. With crowdsourcing, it's a lot easier to predict that. If people are participating in these micro tasks and they're getting assessed through in a level that's considered reputable by the community itself and potentially outside of the community, and more crowdsourcing sites are coming on, more and more people are engaging in crowdsourcing, more and more people are applying skills and actually gaining skills through this exercise. That, to me, means lots and lots of data points that can be utilized. And this is a couple of examples that I have. Topcoder recently received funding from the U.S. Veterans Affairs to provide a badging system for vets that are coming back to the U.S. On the Topcoder website. And so essentially what this program allows vets to do is come onto Topcoder, create a profile, do whatever tasks that they want to do, participate in these software programming competitions, but they can also, using a facility that's provided by the VA, upload what's called their MOC codes, which are military occupation specialty codes that they've received. These are badges, essentially badges that they've received from the military. They're more titles than badges, but we've converted these to badges on the Topcoder website so that now when somebody says, when somebody uploads their information and they have a certain proficiency in aviation or whatever, that'll show up on their profile. But we're going to take it a step further, and this is what interested the VA. We're going to attempt to draw a correlation statistically through data mining by running data mining competitions between somebody's military skills and somebody's proficiency as they compete in Topcoder competitions. So I might be able to draw an empirical correlation between somebody who comes out of the military with a military occupation code that says they're medium-grade electronic warfare and figure out that that person is really good in software security. You know, that not just that person is good, but statistically, over the long term, we've found that there's an 87% probability that somebody that has this sort of a military occupation code is going to participate to an acceptable level of proficiency when they're participating in a software security task. And so that's a really neat level of correlation. That would be very beneficial to military personnel if they could have a way to bridge their military occupation codes with actual jobs that exist in the United States as they're coming back, but it also opens the door to a whole boatload of what can be done with digital badging. How can digital badges be predictive? How can they be more useful to potential employers? I guess I should stop at this point. And I have about, what, 5 or 10? 6 minutes, okay. I'll stop at this point and open the door up for questions. And hopefully, you know, some of what I said stuck and individuals were able to get value out of this.
So how do you see this playing into maybe the future of higher education? Do you see badges becoming a part of the future diploma, or I don't know, maybe just touch on that a little bit.
It's a very good question. In fact, that's one of the slides I skipped. Sorry about skipping this. So, you know, it's not an easy question to answer. The value and the effectiveness of education and how it plays into how individuals learn is always a subject of controversy. And so just because there's now this concept of digital badges doesn't really change that controversy at all. But it certainly opens the door for, you know, it's really the internet. And it's the massive amounts of micro-learning that are possible now. There's, you know, just so many websites for learning and so many websites for badging now that I think it's necessary for the education institution to kind of change and try to embrace that as opposed to compete with it. Because the way it's being viewed now is it's competing. We saw some of those inflammatory articles at the beginning of the presentation. And it's not about, you know, whether or not higher education is necessary or whether degrees are necessary anymore. It's about how can they be integrated with the digital age and the way that, you know, the individuals, the students, think. And they're thinking differently. They're learning differently. It's not just from universities. There's so many different options that are open now. And so I would think that it would be, you know, beneficial for universities to start thinking about more granular achievements, right? Because, you know, granular achievements help to tell a story, right? And a story is more of, it's just a more robust way of presenting somebody's skill sets. It's not just that I went to this institution and received this degree. You know, more granular badging might be that I participated in this course, I participated in a specific exercise within a specific course, a specific competition, and I participated in this specific role, and my team happened to, you know, assess my level of proficiency in that task within that course as being acceptable or hitting some level, and therefore I get an achievement for that or a badge for that. And the accumulation of all of those achievements really tell a bigger picture. They tell a more rounded picture of, you know, who an individual is as opposed to just slapping a degree on somebody. So, you know, granularity, I would say, is the biggest.
So perhaps Topcoder has resources for organizations, but are there low-cost or perhaps even open-source solutions where an organization can say, I have a way to measure merit, and I want to build in a badge system and try to even aggregate it myself, or something that internally an organization can try to harness this type of system? Are there resources already available?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what Mozilla is going for in making their entire architecture open. So as a consumer of badges, you know, I can get access to somebody's entire badging history. In fact, a lot of people's entire badging history, and I can draw whatever correlations that I want based on those badges. So I can specifically, if I'm going to do research, I can focus on specific badges that I know exist. You know, depending on what company I am, maybe I'm a biopharmaceutical company and I'm interested in, you know, people's biological badges, people's computational badges, and people's chemistry badges, right? So I can specifically focus on those. The fact that it's an open architecture making information available, as long as it's been made available by the actual producer of the badges, really do, you know, research into that and free, you know, as long as you have the capacity to tap into that infrastructure, you know, using a programming language or downloading badges from a website or whatever, then that information should be available.
Great. Well, this concludes today's Hinckley Forum. Please join me in thanking our guest.